Chapter 43. Is it a covenant? Apostrophe apostrophe he asked. It is, apostrophe said she. Lord Mountclair warmed from surface to center, as if he had drunk of hypocrisy, and, after holding her hand for some moments, raised it gently to his lips. 2 days and you are mine, apostrophe he said. That I believe I never shall be. Apostrophe apostrophe, never shall be? Why, darling? Apostrophe, I don't know. Some catastrophe will prevent it. I shall be dead perhaps. Apostrophe apostrophe, you distress me. Ah, you meant that I should be dead, because you think I am old. But that is a mistake, I am not very old. Apostrophe apostrophe, I thought only of myself, nothing of you. Apostrophe apostrophe, yes, I know. Dearest, it is dismal and chilling here, let us go. Apostrophe, Ethelberta mechanically moved with him, and felt there was no retreating now. In the meantime the young lady in whom the solemn vowing concerned had lingered round the choir screen, as if fearing to enter, yet loth to go away. The service terminated, the heavy books were closed, doors were opened, and the feet of the few persons who had attended evensong began pattering down the paved alleys. Not wishing Piketty to know that the object of her secret excursion had been discovered, Ethelberta now stepped out of the west doorway with the Viscount before Piketty had emerged from the other, and they walked along the path together until she overtook them. I fear it becomes necessary for me to stay in Melchester tonight, apostrophe said Lord Mountclair. I have a few matters to attend to here, as the result of our arrangements. But I will first accompany you as far as Anglebury, and see you safely into a carriage there that shall take you home. Tomorrow I will drive to Nulcia, when we will make the final preparations. Apostrophe apostrophe, Ethelberta would not have him go so far and back again, merely to attend upon her. Hence they parted at the railway, with due and correct tenderness. And when the train had gone, Lord Mountclair returned into the town on the special business he had mentioned, for which there remained only the present evening and the following morning, if he were to call upon her in the afternoon of the next day, the day before the wedding now so recklessly hastened on his part, and so coolly assented to on hers. By the time that the two young people had started it was nearly dark. Some portions of the railway stretched through little copses and plantations where, the leaf-shedding season being now at its height, red and golden patches of fallen foliage lay on either side of the rails, and as the travelers passed, all these death-stricken bodies boiled up in the whirlwind created by the velocity, and were sent flying right and left of them in myriads, a clean fan track being left behind. Piketty was called from the observation of these phenomena by a remark from her sister. Piketty, the marriage is to be very early indeed. It is to be the day after tomorrow if it can. Nevertheless I don't believe in the fact, I cannot. Apostrophe apostrophe, did you arrange it so? Nobody can make you marry so soon. Apostrophe, I agreed to the day, apostrophe murmured Ethelberta languidly. How can it be? The gay dresses and the preparations and the people, how can they be collected in the time, Berta? And so much more of that will be required for a lord of the land than for a common man. Oh, I can't think it possible for a sister of mine to marry a lord. Apostrophe apostrophe, and yet it has been possible any time this last month or two, strange as it seems to you. Dot dot dot, it is to be not only a plain and simple wedding, without any lofty appliances, but a secret one, as secret as if I were some underage heiress to an Indian fortune, and he a young man of nothing a year. Apostrophe apostrophe, has Lord Mountclair said it must be so private? I suppose it is on account of his family. Apostrophe apostrophe, no. I say so, and it is on account of my family. Father might object to the wedding, I imagine, from what he once said, or he might be much disturbed about it, so I think it better that he and the rest should know nothing till all is over. You must dress again as my sister tomorrow, dear. Lord Mountclair is going to pay us an early visit to conclude necessary arrangements. Apostrophe apostrophe oh, the life as a lady at Enworth Court. The flowers, the woods, the rooms, the pictures, the plate, and the jewels. Horses and carriages rattling and prancing, seneschals and pages, footmen hopping up and hopping down. It will be glory then. Apostrophe, we might hire our father as one of my retainers. To increase it, apostrophe said Ethelberta dryly. Piketty's countenance fell. How shall we manage all about that? Tis terrible, really. Apostrophe apostrophe, the marriage granted, those things will right themselves by time and weight of circumstances. You take a wrong view in thinking of glories of that sort. My only hope is that my life will be quite private and simple, as will best become my inferiority and Lord Mountclair's staidness. Such a splendid library as there is at Enkworth. Piketty quartos, folios, history, verse, Elzevirs, Caxton's, all that has been done in literature from Moses down to Scott. With such companions I can do without all other sorts of happiness. Apostrophe apostrophe, and you will not go to town from Easter to Lammastide, as other noble ladies do? Apostrophe apostrophe asked the younger girl, rather disappointed at this aspect of a viscountess's life. I don't know. Apostrophe apostrophe, but you will give dinners, and travel, and go to see his friends, and have them to see you? Apostrophe apostrophe, I don't know. Apostrophe apostrophe, will you not be, then, as any other peeress, and shall not I be as any other peeress's sister? Apostrophe apostrophe, that too, I do not know. All is mystery. Nor do I even know that the marriage will take place. I feel that it may not, and perhaps so much the better, since the man is a stranger to me. I know nothing whatever of his nature, and he knows nothing of mine. Apostrophe apostrophe, 40. Melchester continued, the commotion wrought in Julian's mind by the abrupt incursion of Ethelberta into his quiet sphere was thorough and protracted. The witchery of her presence he had grown strong enough to withstand in part, but her composed announcement that as he had intended to marry another, and, as far as he could understand, was intending it still, added a new chill to the old shade of disappointment which custom was day by day enabling him to endure. During the whole interval in which he had produced those diapason blasts, heard with such inharmonious feelings by the three auditors outside the screen, his thoughts had wandered wider than his notes in conjectures on the character and position of the gentleman seen in Ethelberta's company. Owing to his assumption that Lord Mountclair was but a stranger who had accidentally come in at the side door, Christopher had barely cast a glance upon him, and the wide difference between the years of the Viscount and those of his betrothed was not so particularly observed as to raise that point to an item in his objections now. Lord Mountclair was dressed with all the cunning that could be drawn from the metropolis by money and reiterated dissatisfaction. He prided himself on his upright carriage. His stick was so thin that the most malevolent could not insinuate that it was of any possible use in walking. His teeth had put on all the vigor and freshness of a second spring. Hence his look was the slowest of possible clocks in respect of his age, and his manner was equally as much in the rear of his appearance. Christopher was now over 25. He was getting so well accustomed to the spectacle of a world passing him by and splashing him with its wheels that he wondered why he had ever minded it. His habit of dreaming instead of doing had led him up to a curious discovery. It is no new thing for a man to fathom profundities by indulging humors. The active, the rapid, the people of splendid momentum have been surprised to behold what results attend the lives of those whose usual plan for discharging their active labors has been to postpone them indefinitely. Certainly, the immediate result in the present case was, to all but himself, small and invisible, but it was of the nature of highest things. What he had learned was that a woman who has once made a permanent impression upon a man cannot altogether deny him her image, by denying him her company, and that by sedulously cultivating the acquaintance of this creature of contemplation she becomes to him almost a living soul. Hence a sublimated Ethelberta accompanied him everywhere, one who never teased him, eluded him, or disappointed him. When he smiled, she smiled, when he was sad, she sorrowed. He may be said to have become the literal duplicate of that whimsical unknown rhapsodist who wrote of his own similar situation, "By absence this good means I gain, that I can catch her, where none can watch her, in some close corner of my brain. There I embrace and kiss her, and so I both enjoy and miss her." This frame of mind naturally induced an amazing abstraction in the organist, never very vigilant at the best of times. He would stand and look fixedly at a frog in a shady pool, and never once think of batrachians, or pause by a green bank to split some tall blade of grass in two filaments without removing it from its stalk, passing on ignorant that he had made a cat o' nine tails of a graceful slip of vegetation. He would hear the cathedral clock strike one, and go the next minute to see what time it was. "I never seed such a man as Mr. Julian is," said the head blower. "He'll meet me anywhere out of doors, and never wink or nod. You'd hardly expect it. I don't find fault, but you'd hardly expect it, seeing how I play the same instrument as he do himself, and have done it for so many years longer than he. How I have indulged that man too. If 'tis pedals for 2 mortal hours of practice, I never complain, and he has plenty of vagaries. When 'tis hot summer weather, there's nothing will do for him but choir, great, and swell altogether, till air faces in a vapor. And on a frosty winter night he'll keep me there, while he tweedles upon the 12th and 16th till my arms be scrammed for want of motion, and never speak a word out of doors." Somebody suggested that perhaps Christopher did not notice his coadjutor's presence in the street, and time proved to the organ blower that the remark was just. Whenever Christopher caught himself at these vacuous tricks, he would be struck with admiration of Ethelberta's wisdom, foresight, and self-command in refusing to wed such an incapable man. He felt that he ought to be thankful that a bright memory of her was not also denied to him, and resolved to be content with it as a possession, since it was as much of her as he could decently maintain. Wrapped thus in a humorous sadness, he passed the afternoon under notice, and in the evening went home to Faith, who still lived with him, and showed no sign of ever being likely to do otherwise. Their present place and mode of life suited her well. She revived at Melchester like an exotic sent home again. The leafy close, the climbing buttresses, the pondering ecclesiastics, the great doors, the singular keys, the whispered talk, echoes of lonely footsteps, the sunset shadow of the tall steeple, reaching further into the town than the good bishop's teaching, and the general complexion of a spot, where morning at the stillness of evening and spring some of the tones of autumn, formed a proper background to a person constituted as Faith, who, like Miss Hepzibah Pyncheon's chicken, possessed in miniature all the antiquity of her progenitors. After tea, Christopher went into the streets, as was frequently his custom, less to see how the world crept on there than to walk up and down for nothing at all. It had been market day, and remnants of the rural population that had visited the town still lingered at corners, their toes hanging over the edge of the pavement, and their eyes wandering about the street. The angle which formed the turning point of Christopher's promenade was occupied by a jeweler's shop, of a standing which completely outshone every other shop in that, or any trade throughout the town. Indeed, it was a staple subject of discussion in Melchester, how a shop of such pretensions could find patronage sufficient to support its existence in a place which, though well populated, was not fashionable. It had not long been established there, and was the enterprise of an incoming man whose whole course of procedure seemed to be dictated by an intention to astonish the native citizens very considerably before he had done. Nearly everything was glass in the frontage of this very mart, and its contents glittered like the Amakrisos stone. The panes being of plate glass, and the shop having two fronts, a diagonal view could be had through it from one to the other of the streets to which it formed a corner. This evening, as on all evenings, a flood of radiance spread from the window lamps into the thick autumn air, so that from a distance, that corner appeared as the glistening nucleus of all the light in the town. Towards it idle men and women unconsciously bent their steps, and closed in upon the panes like night birds upon the lantern of a lighthouse. When Christopher reached the spot, there stood close to the pavement a plain close carriage, apparently waiting for some person who was purchasing inside. Christopher would hardly have noticed this had he not also perceived, pressed against the glass of the shop window, an unusual number of local noses belonging to overgrown working lads, two spots, an idiot, the ham smoker's assistant with his sleeves rolled up, a scot and lot freeholder, three or four seamstresses, the young woman who brought home the washing, and so on. The interest of these gazers in some proceedings within, which by reason of the gaslight, were as public as if carried on in the open air, was very great. Yes, that's what he's a buying, oh ha, ha. " said one of the young men, as the shopman removed from the window a gorgeous blue velvet tray of wedding rings, and laid it on the counter. "'Tis what you may come to yourself, sooner or later, God have mercy upon ye, and as such no scoffing matter," said an older man. "Faith, I'd as lief cry as laugh to see a man in that corner. He's a gent getting up in years too. He must have been through it a few times afore, seemingly, to sit down and buy the tools so cool as that. Well, no. See what the shyest will do at such times. You bain't yourself then. No man living is hisself then. " said the ham smoker's man. "'Tis a thought to look at, that a chap will take all this trouble to get a woman into his house, and a 12-month after would as soon hear it thunder as hear her sing." The policeman standing near was a humane man, through having a young family he could hardly keep, and he hesitated about telling them to move on. Christopher had before this time perceived that the articles were laid down before an old gentleman who was seated in the shop, and that the gentleman was none other than he who had been with Ethelberta in the concert room. The discovery was so startling. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.